This is like the complete mind shift.
I think that you could add $1 million a year to your business doing something like this.
Amazing. Like, I got goosebumps. I just never thought of it this way before.
Nir Eyal, it's so wonderful to have you, man.
Thanks, bud. This is great. It's great to be here.
We're kind of BFFs now.
Let's be honest.
I mean, that's what happens when you like spend like 3 days. We're at this retreat here in Sonoma County, and it's just been a whirlwind. But had an opportunity to bring you. I mean, you're kind of like extremely famous. So I was like, let me bring this dude.
Not sure which planet that's on, but all right, I'll take it.
All right. So author, speaker, extremely handsome. Tell us a bit more about all the things you're involved in.
Thanks. Yeah. So I wrote a couple books. My first book was called Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products, which is all about how companies can build engaging products and services to keep people coming back. The second book, Hooked, was all about how to build good habits. The second book, Indistractable, is about how to break bad habits. And that's for everybody, not just business owners, anybody out there who's struggling like I was for many, many years with distraction, too many pings, dings, and rings to actually focus on the important stuff in life. And so that's what Indistractable is all about.
So one of the things we've been talking about a lot here at the retreat is like there's a bunch of other authors here and other internet entrepreneur-y type people. It's just been fascinating hearing how people make money. Like a lot of people, you know, have different revenue streams. And so the bulk of your business is writing, right? Books and speaking, right? Mm-hmm. And so we got into a conversation. You were like very curious, like sponsorships, tell me more, yeah. Right?
And also super skeptical.
Yeah. So I wanted to start here because, frankly, I talk with a lot of people day in and day out, you know, who are like influencers, creators who like already are bought in, like sponsorships, of course, like that's a major way in which I make money. In fact, if you look at most of the studies of like those types of entrepreneurs, it's like the number one revenue stream is like sponsorships. Mm. But for someone like you, I wanted to bring you on to talk about this because you have a lot of folks I found have this inherent skepticism where it's like, I don't know, like, I don't know how that would even fit into my business. So I was hoping you could chat for a bit about like, what is this? Where does that come from? Tell me some of your inherent, limiting beliefs. Maybe I'm calling them limiting, but like your inherent beliefs about working with brands and what that might mean for your career.
Totally. Yeah. So when we met and you told me what you did, I was like, okay, that's for somebody else. But I was still just curious, you know, about you and the business. And my initial skepticism came from, I get a lot of inbound inquiries of, you know, can you push this, or can we sponsor that, or can you put us in your newsletter, or what about this article? And I think I've always just kind of clumped that into one big category of not authentic. It's not me. And sometimes, although what I like a product, I don't even want to give the slightest whiff that I would recommend it because I've been paid for it.
Okay.
And so I've just kind of just said no across the board to everything. I have about 350,000 followers on LinkedIn. I have an email newsletter that goes out to about 150,000 people. And so it's super, super important to me that at the end of the day, they know that everything is super authentic. That it's because I put in the time and mind share to if I do recommend something, it's no strings attached. And so that's been probably my biggest hesitation is just making sure that there's integrity there to what I write about.
Do you think when you see other people talk about a product or talk about a brand, do you have like your own like, oh, like that person's sponsored or like I think less of them because of that? Do you have that gut visceral reaction when you see other people do it?
To be totally honest, it depends on the product.
Okay.
Am I allowed to call out specific brands?
Let's go.
Let's go. Right. I think there's a lot of people who push products that they know better.
Okay.
Like, I think, let's just call them various green drinks.
Okay.
Like, that's...
The prototypical brand that you would hear in a podcast idea.
Yes. And I can't imagine that the person who's pushing that really thinks that is as valuable as all the other stuff that you could be doing that is way more effective, right? Diet. Exercise, don't drink, don't smoke, have friends, get sleep. And so it's very important to me that it's appropriately placed as opposed to, you know, we talked about something that's really important and then elevating a brand to make it look like it's as important as opposed to what it really is, which is way to make some more money and keep things sustainable, which I respect, right? Like, I don't think there's any I think everybody knows what sponsorships are about. But if you ask personally, my visceral reaction is that, credibility. It has to be authentic.
Sure. You know, one thing I think I'm hearing you say, so the experience is like, okay, I have all this inbound and I'm just reacting to the inbound, right? It's like, it's binary almost. It's like, yes or no. Do I want it? Well, first of all, it's like, do I want to do sponsorships? Yes or no. Mm. But then even on a micro level, it's like, am I interested in this brand? Yes or no. Mm. And this is not an uncommon reaction to people who have either never done sponsorships before or just don't understand how they'd fit in their business. It's like, they're just constantly reacting to stuff. And I think, you know, one of the biggest insights for people who are kind of curious, sponsorship curious, is realizing that, like, if that's all you're doing is just reacting to other people saying, like, hey, do you want to work with us? Then, of course, oftentimes there's this reaction that, like, no, not for me. No, not for me. Or, like, I would never. What is this random brand that's reaching out?
Right.
This is not related to me, et cetera. And so I think if you're able to think, like, what would it look like for me to be the one actually leading this? To sit and think, like, what brand or what company would just be so unbelievably values aligned with me, my book, my audience, my followers, that it's like a no-brainer. Like, you would, it would, your energy would just be like jumping. Like, what do I need to do to make this happen?
Right.
Like, when I say that to you, like, does that, what is that, what is your reaction when I say, like,
I think it hits home because part of my job is to recommend tools. Like, people with Indistractable specifically, it's about how to avoid not doing what you say you're going to do. And part of what I teach is to use tools to block out the distraction that comes from other tools, right? So your phone, you're always on your phone checking Instagram. Well, did you know you can use all kinds of tools that can help you avoid that distraction? And we should use that technology to build better technology and to have better usage patterns with technology. So my readers come to me looking for recommendations. But those aren't the companies that are inbound. So you're absolutely right. Like, but to be honest, I haven't ever considered the possibility of if I'm already recommending this tool and that's 100% authentic.
Right.
Right now, and I do actually have a website where I send people when they ask about, hey, what tool should I use for this and that? And I just have a bunch of links. So I'm already doing it. I just don't get paid for that.
So here's the really interesting insight, I think, which is that this binary choice that happens when you get inbound, it's always about, a lot of times it's like, me, do I like this product? Is this something that I would feel comfortable recommending? Mm-hmm. And I think a huge shift for a lot of people is that whether you like it or not is kind of irrelevant. That's table six. Yes, of course. Of course you have to like it. But the big unlock is like, is this something that would serve my readers? Or is this something that would serve my audience? And the only way to know this without assuming is to ask them. And so what I often encourage people to do, and this is perfect for someone like you, is let's actually do what I call a psychographic research study. So I am going to send them literally a Google form saying, hey, I'm working on my next book or I'm working on my next series of podcasts or newsletters for the rest of the year. And I want to learn more about you. Yeah, you have the demographics and, you know, genders and geography and all that stuff in some of the platforms, right? But what is it, like, I want to know, like, what type of jobs do you have? Are you married? Do you have kids? What types of brands and products and services are you using and loving right now? How are you interacting with my content? Are you binging my, you know, did you binge my books and, you know, back to back in like a week? Or, you know, have you been reading me over several years, the newsletter or whatever, just like how they're interacting with you and your content and your brand? You know, what types of things are keeping you up at night? What problems do you have? And so you can ask.
So I love that idea. Yeah. No, I've struggled a bit with, I don't want to burn out my audience, right? Like I'm so conscious of, I don't want anyone to unsubscribe from the newsletter. So I want to bother them as little as possible. How can I do that in a way that feels like, hey, I'm doing this because I want to add value. Like I want to give you more of what you're looking for without troubling them.
Well, first of all, the idea about burning them out or them unsubscribing and things like that, the way I've always looked at this, because I have a newsletter as well, is that if someone unsubscribes, good, because I'm no longer serving them. And so if they're going to get annoyed by me asking, sending a survey, like this, in service. It's not like, it's like, hey, I want to help you. Right. Someone unsubscribes because of that, fine.
And would you do that as a separate email or do you integrate that into the
newsletter? So there's a bunch of different ways. You could do a dedicated email. You could ask one question a week over 8 weeks at the you don't even have to do a Google form.
There we go.
You could do a PS. You could say, PS.
Just one question.
One question for over 8 weeks. And you could start getting replies.
Right.
Right. You could have a VA categorize those, put those into a spreadsheet or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like you could, you know, you could then dump all that into AI and do some sentiment analysis, get some themes.
Right. That's brilliant, because I'm already asking at the end of every newsletter, what did you think of this newsletter? Like, I could very easily just replace that with just one question at a time.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe the question that you replace is one of them is, what types of tools, you know, have you been finding helpful lately to, like, you know, be indistractable or whatever, you know?
And are you finding that it's better to leave it as an open-ended type of question?
Definitely. Open-ended. Yeah, because then you'll get much richer data. Yeah. You'll get people sending you huge paragraphs. You'll get some people sending you three words. Mm. Also, it's just such a great way to get more engagement, get a deeper connection with your readers. Versus, I think what a lot of folks, and I'm not saying you, but like what a lot of people in your position who, well, first of all, I'm just going to like be honest. When I knew that you were going to be here, I was so intimidated. I was like, oh, I've like read all your books. I'm like a huge fan. And so I think a lot of people would look at someone like you on this huge pedestal and feel as though when you're sending out a newsletter, it's broadcast. Mm. It's like, near talking to me. It's like, you know, the idea of like getting a reply back from you or like having an engaged conversation with you. I just would never think that that would be possible because you're up here to me. And I think that encouraging this like more of a circular dialogue with your audience just will build such a deeper connection with the people who are in your community.
Nice.
And so doing these types of activities, there's so many benefits of this psychographic this research. And so imagine, let's say you ask that question about tools or whatever, and like 25% of the people who respond say one tool in particular. Imagine now you go to that brand and be like,
so just so I'm gonna do this.
Yes, okay.
So I need to know,
okay,
how would you phrase that question to yield the best results?
I would say I wouldn't use it as the first question in the series of 8 weeks that you're doing it. I would start with, you know, what type of job do you have, or what's keeping you up at night? What problems do you have? This type of thing.
Even if I'm doing it one per week, you'd start with that?
I would start with, yeah, like probably like learning about more the, you know, are you married? Do you have kids? What type of problems do you have? That I would start there.
And sorry for a stupid question.
Yeah, no, it's not stupid.
Why do I want that? Like, what would I do with the fact that you're married or not?
I think it would be interesting to understand if there is a certain, like a larger, so for example, if you learned that like 95% of the people who are responding are single, or 95% of the people who are responding are divorced. I don't know. That can also lead to new content insights. Or even when you're engaged, the reason I say this is that oftentimes when you're engaged in partnership conversations, it's all a narrative. It's all a story. When you're talking about why a brand or a company wants to access your community, you need to be able to very credibly talk about not just the demographics. You need to talk about, I really understand these people on a deep level. And they're divorced and they're having problems figuring out the next chapter for them.
So if I'm hearing clear signal, then whoa, that makes a difference. And if I hear, like I could probably guess it's a representative sample.
Totally.
Is that then less valuable just to...
Well, I think... You know, there may be some signals that are like, I don't recognize a clear theme here. Right. But others, it's like, wow.
Okay. And you don't know until you ask.
And you don't know until you ask.
Right.
Okay. And so I think that I've done this countless times with coaching clients and so on. And always there's like very surprising things to them. Here's a good example. So I had a coaching client who talked about online security. So like, you know, your digital footprint and like, you know, identity protection and all this type of stuff. And he did lots of partnerships, but he just felt constrained by like, oh, there's just like only so many companies that I could like work with. And it's just, I don't know what to do. And so we did this exercise and he uncovered that a huge percentage, 70% of his audience was interested in home security as well.
Okay.
So like you can imagine, like not only do I want to protect my digital footprint, but sure. I want to protect my family.
Right.
And so immediately.
Super neurotic people who want to protect everything.
Yeah.
So there's like a product line.
For yeah. Them. And so he was like, oh, I'm going to go pitch a home security company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, because again, it's in service of my audience. And he never would have thought in a million years that like they would care about something like that.
Right.
So he was in this tunnel vision for so long. And so the same example here is like maybe you would discover that you have 150,000 people or 300,000 people on LinkedIn who like have this like one problem that you just never would have thought of because you didn't ask.
Okay. So start with demographics the first few weeks, and then move into what would be the next question.
Some of the deeper questions, probably asking about what problems you have for sure, what's keeping you up at night, and then literally asking, well, okay, there's a series of questions you can ask. So I talk in my audience first framework. It's your PSA, your products, your sponsors, and your alliances. And so what you do right now is products, right? You've got books, you've got speaking. And so it's things where you're like directly serving them. You're selling this directly to a conference organizer or selling it directly to a reader, right? This bucket of the it's this pillar, right? The next bucket is like, there's a lot of people who probably come to you and say that they're having challenges with certain things. And you're like, you know what? I'm never going to write a book about that. Or I'm never going to give a talk about that because that's not really my zone of genius. That's not my thing. But at the end of the day, you're in the business of transformation, right? Of outcomes, of helping people improve their lives and things like that. And so in my view, it's actually your job as an educator to go out there and forge partnerships with other brands and companies who could serve your readers, serve your audience with their software or their tool that you're never going to make a SaaS for that.
Right.
But imagine the service that you feel being like, hey, this SaaS is going to change your life to help you, like Freedom, for example. Do you know the Freedom app?
Yeah, I know.
So I use that. And so it's like, imagine you feel great recommending this tool because it's going to help people become indistractable.
Okay.
And so you're the one actually reaching out and being like, this is so authentic because I have people constantly asking me how they can become untethered from this, you know, addiction.
It's already a tool I recommend. Like it's literally on one of my pages.
Yeah. And so I think this is a recurring theme that I feel where it's just like people, entrepreneurs, creators, they're waiting for things to come to them.
Yeah.
I'm getting all this inbound, but none of them are to my liking.
Yeah.
And what would it mean for you to be the one to reach out and be like, okay, how would I reach out to Freedom? What would I even say? Mm. How would I create and craft a super values aligned partnership proposal that just makes sense for everyone?
Okay. Can we bounce around with some different questions?
Yes, of course.
Okay. So for example, if I recommend, you asked earlier about like, what are my concerns and hesitations? If I recommend Freedom, which is a great tool, Opal is also a really great tool.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I then, with my audience, say, like, I recommended this 1 week, but then I'm recommending a similar competitive tool, neither of which I want to build, and that makes total sense.
Sure. Right?
You should go elsewhere for it. And I totally now see what you're saying about, like, if you're not going to do it, it's still providing value to the audience.
Right.
But what about if they're competitors?
So I think that the way I look at this always is that, so how I position myself. So for me, for my business, for example, like, I serve other creators, right? And I'm constantly, you know, get inbound from my audience, my customers asking for recommendations on my tech stack. Like, oh, where do you have your community and what do you use to process payments and this type of thing, right? And, you know, I use certain things, but also there's other tools that I recommend oftentimes, even though I'm not using them, because I know that for their use case, this is the best option. And so if there is true commoditization between two competitors and this literally blind result, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference, then of course you have to, you know, hitch your horse to something, the product that you most authentically
resonate
with. But if you truly fundamentally believe that, like, okay, this product, Opal, is great for these types of people, and Freedom is great for these types of people, then it's 100% aligned for you to recommend both products, even be sponsored by both products, because you make that disclosure. You say, like, look, you know, yes, I, you know, here's the tool that I use, but like for these types of people, this tool actually makes the most sense.
Right.
And as long as you upfront share that, not you disclose that not only with your audience members, but with the sponsors at the outset of this conversation, so that they know that, like, look, I consider myself an unbiased advocate for my community, my readers. And so you need to know that I'm recommending lots of different products here, but I'm going to authentically share that I think your product is the best for this subset of my community.
Okay. And how do you communicate that to your audience?
I think it's like involving them. I think this is the concern that a lot of people have, is that they never talk about brands or companies in any capacity other than when they're being sponsored. Meaning that, like, all right, boom, we're going to break into the ad break, you know, in the podcast or the YouTube video, their newsletter or something like that. And I'm constantly having a proactive dialogue with my audience. So this is like a weird example, but, like, you know, my wife and I are YouTubers. That's how we started. And so what we would oftentimes do, what we learned to do, would be do behind the scenes content. So we would be filming, or we would be working on a brand partnership, and we would do some stories on Instagram, for example, be like, oh, guys, we're so excited. We're working on this brand partnership right now. We can't say what the brand is quite yet. But when you see us in like this shirt or whatever, when this comes out in like a month or something, just know that this is like a partnership with the brand. And so we would like start this kind of early dialogue with them about, you know, the things that we're working on. So that's one way if you like are on social media. But the second way is, I think it's this, it's going back to the psychographic research. When you're asking the questions about the tools and so on, it becomes, instead of like, I am sponsored by this brand, and then you do the sponsorship, it becomes this, hey, I asked, I listened
nice.
To you.
Nice. And that's what happened.
And I went out and sought this for you.
Yeah.
So you can literally show the results. You could be like, literally, I literally asked you this question 3 weeks ago in the newsletter, and here's the chart. You show them the graph. You say, like, look, I got 50% of you came back and said you use Opal. And so I literally went out and I emailed the marketing manager of Opal for you. And I brought you this exclusive opportunity, this exclusive deal.
Nice.
And so I think this, one of the things I talk about in my book, Sponsor Magnet, is you have to engineer sponsorships to be win, win, win. So it's these three wins. A lot of people think it's like a win for you. You're getting paid. A win for the brand, obviously, because they get exposure to your audience. But it's that third win that everyone forgets, which is that your audience better be winning.
Right.
So if there's no discount code or exposure to a new product or something, you, it's your job as the entrepreneur to engineer the win, to say to the brand, like, hey, I understand that you want to pay me 20 grand or 10 grand or whatever it is for this newsletter integration or partnership or whatever, but I would actually be okay accepting 9 grand or 8 grand if you can extend a 30% off promo to my audience. So now you feel great because it's like, look, I'm sacrificing basically to ensure that my audience is thrilled for this. So there's a lot of different components, I think, that you can do to just like feel good about bringing this to your audience.
I love it. Okay. So we got the survey part.
Yep.
We figure out what to, I love that idea of showing the pie. That's genius. Like, here, I did this survey. Here's the pie chart. Here's what you all are looking for. And I feel like you could do that with many, not only the actual tool, but even up funnel of like, you're looking for tools, right?
Yes.
Or here's the six things you told me. I love that. And then maybe having that be the incentive for the next question. Here's what I did with what you answered last time, and here's what I need to know for the next one. That's beautiful.
Totally.
There's a lot here actually that relates to my first book around the investment phase,
yep.
loading the next trigger.
Yeah,
that's great. And then, okay, so then now what? Now what do we do?
So let me finish the pillar example of like, so the sponsorships, and then, because I do want to get back to this eventually. So it's the P, it's the products, it's the sponsors, and then it's the alliances.
Okay.
So another thing that you might uncover, one of the questions that you could ask in this psychographic research study is, what other people would you love to see me collaborate with in this industry and why?
Nice.
And so they may say, well, you know, yes, Nir, you helped me with, you know, not being distracted, or you helped me, you know, build habit forming products or whatever. But I'm having a lot of like issues at home, work-life balance. I'm working constantly.
So are you literally asking what is keeping you at night? Is that up at night?
Yes.
The question.
100%.
Just like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And it can be about anything.
It could be,
Might not have anything to do with my book.
Totally. 100%. Okay. And because I think it's really interesting to know, like, okay, well, the people that follow me, the people that are reading my content, I want to know them from a holistic level. Like, I'm helping them solve this issue in this, like, this compartment, but like, what else is going on in their life? Right? Because they're complex human beings, right? And so imagine if you got, you know, got back a bunch of people saying that, like, I'm having work-life balance issues, or maybe I'm having marriage issues. Let's say, for example, like, I'm working so much that my, you know, I'm suffering my marriage, right? Are you ever going to write a book about that? Are you ever going to do talks about that? Probably not, because it's not your zone of genius. It's not your area of expertise. But what would it look like for you to partner with another author or another coach or some other consultant who helps people in this regard? Again, going back to the data, you said, hey, 40% of you are saying you're having marital problems because of your grinding at work or whatever. I actually want to tell you about my friend's book or I want to tell you about my friend's coaching program or life, whatever it is, right? Because it's about service. It's about like, hey, let me help you like work on this area of your life that is like the pain, you know, the really painful thing.
Right.
And then when you solve that or you feel more healed with that, I can serve you with the other things that I do over here. And they trust you more now because you introduced them to your friend's book.
Oh, this is like a complete mind shift. Like you're talking about making the newsletter another source of value. Like right now I always thought, well, it's my articles and the curation of other people's articles. But it's all just what I think is cool. So you're subscribing to like what Nir thinks is interesting and helps me. But you're right. I'm not involving what they're asking for. So I could see it more. It actually does become like the more you tell me what you want collectively, like the more you're going to get that. So you have to keep opening the newsletter in a way to get that. That's fantastic. I love it. That's a completely different frame. Okay. So we got product.
Yep.
We got sponsor.
Yep.
Alliances. Yeah. Okay. Right. What else do I, okay. So let's say I find somebody, for marriage support, let's say. Where and now I've done research, like here's what my audience wants. So you say research phase first, or do I research and then go deep?
I would say researching is important, because, by the way, like this is an important like realization, is that there probably is some sort of collaboration to be had with other alliances as well, where you get exposure to their audience too.
Of course, yeah.
Right? So like you come to them with this data and be like, look, I'm having this issue. I really trust you. I loved your book. I read it, this type of thing. I bet you your audience probably might find value from me, from exposure to my concepts, my books, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So like this, I have found, opens up so many opportunities for joint ventures and partnerships and things like that, and being able to leverage other people's distribution.
For sure. Yeah.
But it all comes from service.
Yeah.
Right. And so answer your question, the research element is the critical portion here, and then you would go deep.
Would you recommend doing that research like wide and then going deep, or like let's say, for example, with what kind of products you're looking for, the first one. So I do surveys around what kind of products you're looking for, and then deliver on that, or should I kind of get a lay of the land and then see which one of those three has the highest potential?
I would say follow your energy.
Okay, but there's no specific order to PS.
I don't think so. I mean, it's a lot to chew off or to bite off at once. And so I think it's the most. This is what I would do, is I would probably try to ask all of the questions first, to then try to get a holistic assessment of what's going on with my audience, what's going on with my community, because there may be much more apparent issues that they're having more than others. So, you know, there's this whole painkiller versus vitamin idea, right? And so, like, if it's very obvious that, like, my marriage is falling apart, a bunch of people are saying that, then maybe the alliances to go after first makes the most sense. And so, like, finding what themes come through first is probably, for someone like you who hasn't done a ton of, like, stuff like this yet, that probably would feel the best, because it's, like, very clear that this is, like, an extreme issue that they're having that I could remedy.
Yeah. Have you found any ways to make it feel more personalized? Whereas, as opposed to, you took a big survey with 150,000 other people, and maybe you say marriage, but the majority of people didn't, and so it may be a long time.
You're talking my language.
Bring it.
You're talking my language. So, okay, so this goes back. So there's a couple things that you could do. We're getting into, like, tactics now.
Okay.
So the very first thing, after someone joins my newsletter, I give them a post-segmentation survey. So what I was going to tell you is that, like, after you do this initial survey, you should actually implement this right after people join. So so any new people that are coming in, you're automatically getting this information right away. And you're storing that in a custom field in your ESP, in your email service provider, your software, right?
And so you're asking all the, like,
you're asking. So what I do, so it's crazy, dude. So right after someone joins, I give them this, right? The landing page is this survey. It's 8 quick questions, and people, the completion rate is 90%.
No,
because people don't think they're, like, going to get on the list until they answer the survey.
Wow.
So it's 90% right after they subscribe. This is why it's so important to implement that, because it's much harder to get people to answer these questions once they're already on the list.
Of course, yeah.
And so it's so gold, because then I store all these answers. So for example, for me, the number one question that I care about is, what is your number one goal as a creator this year? That's the question that I ask. And then I send them down different paths depending on their answer.
Okay.
So if someone says, my number one goal is quitting my 9-to-5 job, I have a whole nurture sequence that's completely different. I send them different emails, right? And then for the person that's saying, I want to diversify my revenue streams, I send them different emails. Or the person saying, I just want to learn how to, you know, convert all these free product offers into, like, paid partnerships. Something completely different. And the other brilliant thing, okay, oh my God, I'm so glad we're talking about this. The other brilliant thing about this is that when I am marketing my products, my courses, my offers, and things like that, I send different testimonials to people.
Amazing.
So the person who said, I want to quit my 9-to-5 job, I send them testimonials from someone saying, Molly being like, Justin, help me quit my 9-to-5 job.
Yeah.
And so you start to, it's this brilliant, because it's the personalization aspect is so critical. And so what I would do for you is that the value of not just asking the PS, because it's harder when you do the PS,
right?
Because it's much more qualitative and you can't. So the value of like having it be a link,
yeah,
that they fill out or like a little type out, you can set up automations that add it to that person's custom record,
yeah,
in your ESP, so that when you are sending out emails later, you can literally in the email near, you can say, hey, you told me that insert field. You told me blah, 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 blah. And then here, and then you just kind of go on with the email. So in the email, I have a conditional.
As part of the regular newsletter?
As part of the regular newsletter. I have a conditional where I literally have a, it's called liquid code, but you basically insert the snippet of that person's custom field, and it will be customized to all 150,000 people or however many people filled this out. And then you have a default. So someone who didn't answer, it'll just get the norm, you know, the standard, you know, little sentence or whatever, but it's customized for all the people that answered it.
Amazing. This is, I think, like I got goosebumps because of what one thing I've always struggled with, right? I wrote this book on how to build habit forming products, and an email newsletter, I've always struggled with how do you make that habit forming? And I know how to do it for an app, but to make an email habit forming, you need like every hook, you need a trigger, an action, a reward, an investment. But email doesn't really do that because there's no investment phase. But this is the investment phase. I wouldn't be surprised if just through this method, actually, whether it's about product sponsorships or alliances,
yep,
whether I have that or not, just doing that process, asking about what you're looking for, you are building investment in that newsletter and you're expecting the value to improve over time, which is exactly what it's doing. So I've never thought of it as a way to actually increase the engagement with my newsletter. Even if I don't make any money on it, that's actually super valuable for me.
So one thing, the insight that I want to have for you here is we always talk about, like we were talking like earlier about like, I want to grow the list. What could I do to grow the list, grow the audience, right? And my argument is actually it's a way more effective exercise to increase the engagement of your existing audience,
right,
as a way of driving more book sales.
Yeah.
Right. So for your next book that's coming out or your paperback for
decreased churn, increase open rate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Decrease churn, decrease unsubscriptions. So the more people feel as though this is a personalized experience for them, the more people that will be more, you know, more likely to like purchase your books and so on.
Genius. I love it.
Yeah.
Super helpful.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Dude, I'm so glad to hear that. And frankly, it's like this is one of the things that I talk to people about sponsorships, because a lot of people are always obsessed with like the next sponsor, the next partner, like who do I gotta find? And I'm always thinking, like, look, if you could go out there and forge a partnership with like three super aligned brands and just focus on forging these long-term partnerships with them, you don't need to build this huge sponsorship business where you're like churning and burning tons of different products. It's like, no, it's like, let me find these partners and just focus on increasing the LTV of this relationship.
Right. Or even just building that machine that tells me what people are looking for to increase open rates and decrease churn and build a better newsletter for my subscribers. If I just build that and then, you know, because to go like, let's make more money.
Yeah.
Okay, nice. But like, that's not my primary objective right now. But to make my product more valuable for my subscribers, yes, I'm all ears, right? So I love that approach of like, let's just build that, which doesn't seem like a huge lift, right? Is this something you can do in Active Campaign or?
You can, yeah, you can do it in any ESP.
Okay, so if I build that, then that's a machine that then at the end of those insights, I can offer all kinds of different things.
100%, and you, dude, you may find a new book idea.
Yeah.
Part of this experiment.
Totally.
Because you, I hope you're okay with me sharing this, but like, you know, you've told me that you've struggled with the feedback cycle, right? When you write a book, especially
5 years.
Yeah, because, you're traditionally published and it's the whole process. And like, sometimes it's like, okay, I released it into the universe and like, you know, there's some beta testing and stuff like that. But like, you know, this is way more immediate.
Right.
You know, to get this, like, learn, like, what's going on. And so you may think like, wow, maybe this is like my next book or this is the subject of my next LinkedIn post or newsletter or whatever.
It does sound like it would take quite a bit of work to set up at front, not up front. Do you have any tips or?
Don't be lazy. Do it.
Yeah, but I am lazy. Why do you think I wrote a book about distractions? Because I kept getting distracted before I wrote the book, right?
So I think to me, the way I always assess investments in project time, money, resources is like, is this a one-off project or is this an ongoing pull of my time? And the way I look at this project, this is a one-off thing. You can hire someone for this, help them segment your list, do all that. And then you literally, in just moving forward in every email, you've got the PS, you've got some questions that you're asking people, whatever. But it's not like, an ongoing chunk. Oh, I got to spend 5 hours extra per week doing this. It's not. It's like a one-off project. And then you just reap the dividends of this for every new person that comes on the list.
Right. I love it. Love it. Love it. That's a game changer.
Yeah, dude. So I thought maybe it might be fun to, you know, you got excited about the idea about freedom, for example, mm-hmm. or Opal or something like that. I thought it might be cool to like turn to like maybe some actual examples.
Sure.
Where we maybe do, let's say you're bought in. You're like, all right, I'm going to pitch freedom. Maybe it'd be interesting to see what's going on in their universe and see how you might position this outreach.
Sure.
What do you think?
Sounds good. So just to recap, so I did the survey. Okay. I figured out people want tools.
Yep.
And now they're saying, can you recommend some tools? And now...
Exactly.
No, okay.
100%.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. So usually the first thing that I like to do is just go straight up to the brand's website.
Mm. Should we tell everybody this is not sponsored yet?
Yeah. Not sponsored yet, but soon.
Yeah.
Maybe, but soon. So I like to go to the brand's website and see what does it seem like they care about, right? So the very first thing that I see is we have a banner at the bottom of the website with a 25% off promo code.
Mm.
So we've got a 25, it says get 25% off. A yearly premium plan, and Focus 25 is the promo code. So this seems like an offer that they're giving to anyone. It doesn't seem like a seasonal promotion. Seasonal promotions can be really effective sometimes, mm-hmm. where you know that, like, you know, for Freedom, someone like Freedom, I'm assuming they have something big probably around the new year, mm-hmm. New Year's resolutions and so on. And so, you know, that might be an angle if you're pitching them, right? So we're just going to do data collection, right? Okay, so we've got the 25% off promo code, Focus on What Matters. They're featured in a bunch of different publications. They've got a bunch of different, you know, you can install it, you know, multimodal across different platforms and so on. Focus time used by all these different institutions, some of which you recommend in your book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got some testimonials here, frequently asked questions. So not a ton that I'm finding in terms of like, promotions other than the coupon code, right? So I'm looking, they've got a blog that's like updated pretty regularly. I'm noticing here that they recently did a review that it seems like the Freedom app got, you know, mentioned on Tim Ferriss's podcast, it seems like. So Freedom was featured as the top productivity tool that still works on Tim's podcast. And in fact, we were looking at their social media, and in fact, that seemed like something they were pretty excited about, right? So, oh yeah, Tim talked about us on his latest podcast. And so, for example, this is like a pretty interesting thing that they seem to be pretty excited about.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you know, top, you know, authors and, you know, bloggers and podcasters just like recommending our tool, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's a great example.
Mm-hmm.
So the post that I'm looking at right now is, it says, "Your tech habits shape your well-being. On May 2nd, join us for Digital Wellness Day, a worldwide initiative to reset our relationship with tech." So let's say that we had this conversation, you know, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, and we started doing our research and we decided that we wanted to partner with Freedom. We went and we scrolled back on Freedom's LinkedIn or Instagram or something to, you know, last year, because one of the things I talk about is like, if we want to pitch Freedom, we need to be looking 3 to 4 months out,
mm-hmm.
right? So right now we're sitting in, you know, May time of recording. And so if we wanted to pitch Freedom, we'd probably want to go after like September, October, seeing what they cared about last year. Mm-hmm. And so let's say that we were, you know, that we were sitting here recording this in January or February, we would have seen that like, oh wow, Digital Wellness Day is something that Freedom cares about. And so the pitch to them would become, it's what I call the rote method. Your pitch has to be relevant to a campaign that they've either run in the past,
mm-hmm.
or are currently running. O stands for organic, meaning that you can tie your pitch to organic work that you've already published that illustrates that your audience has an affinity for this, their tool or their product, basically. Mm-hmm. P is proof, so you can show how you've helped others achieve results. And E stands for easy to execute, when they say, yeah, this is actually kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so the form of this pitch, if I was pitching based on Digital Wellness Day, it would be like the subject line of this email would say, Digital Wellness Day in 2025, ?
Mm-hmm.
And so the very first line of this pitch was, hey, I saw that you were running this, you know, promotion around Digital Wellness Day last year. Introduce yourself as, and then the next sentence, introduce yourself as the author of, you know, Indistractable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a huge audience who is constantly looking for, you know, tools. And then you either link your book, you link a blog post, you link a LinkedIn post, you link, you know, archive of a newsletter blast or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So always tie it to something you know the company's interested in.
Yeah, 100%. Because
what if I went to this page and I, like, what would be a criteria where I'd say, oh, this company, may not be a good fit. Does that ever happen?
I mean, it does. It does. Sometimes you might not find like a ton of promos that they're running or a ton of campaigns that they've ran in the past.
Like so Salesforce is a company I was just thinking about.
Yeah.
I mentioned in the book
about
how to build an indistractable workplace.
Yep.
And I don't recommend the tool per se, but I think the company culture has a really interesting story to tell.
Right.
When do I know when is it a good path to follow? And when do I say it's probably not a fit?
Well, I'm going to give you a piece of advice that I don't give everyone because I've given Tiago Forte, our friend, this same advice that when you have reached the level of career success that you have and with your books and like kind of the cachet that you have in the industry, the types of partnerships and relationships that you can forge with companies are different than just a Instagram creator or something like that. Mm. And so I'm less worried about finding something like super, super relevant that the brand has like active budget for. Because again, remember, you're going to be the one reaching out to them and they may invent a budget to partner with you, but it still is because of who you represent in the industry. Because imagine like, you know, when you would part, let's say you were to partner with a company like Salesforce or something, that is PR worthy, right? That's press worthy. If they were to partner with, you know, some random Instagram creator with 50,000 followers or whatever, that's not necessarily pressworthy. Mm. So I think you are afforded a bit of an edge over just some random person. And so I don't get as obsessed for someone like this. Again, this is different advice that I'm giving you versus some random person.
But if I was just getting started.
Yeah, but if you were just getting started, that would be important to like figure. Because again, for Digital Wellness Day, this is what they have budget for.
Right.
So what I'm going to do is I want to go to Freedom's Facebook page. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go over here to the About section and I'm going to go over here to Page Transparency. And right here it says this page is currently running ads. And I'm going to click See All here. I'm going to scroll down and I can look at their ad library.
Oh my gosh, this is awesome.
So this is, anyone can look at this, right? And so right now we can actually watch the ad. So this is an ad that they started running 4 days ago. Take control of your time, not just your screen. But not only can we look at their active ads, but we can actually look, we can X out of here to active ads and we can look at ads they've run in the past as well. So we could scroll down and try to see like, were they running ads for Digital Wellness Day last year? So what I was saying here is, I don't know if they're running ads for Digital Wellness Day. I'm just making an assumption. But in the absence of any sort of promo, this is the next best place to go is like, see, okay, like what are they actually spending money? What is the messaging that they're actively spending money to you know, try to attract?
I mean, just the fact that I don't know if that's a hired actress or an actual influencer, but just the fact that they're hiring people one way or the other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, again, like going through this, what I love doing is I literally copy and paste this entire screen and I dump it into an LLM and I say, tell me what are the top five things that they're running ads for right now that they care about. And so you could find something that seems to be perfectly resonant with the angle of the pitch that you want to do. You'd say, hey, I saw last March you were running ads for this XYZ thing. I'm curious, is that still like a really important initiative for you? And then you launch into your pitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
You say, and so going back to the rope method that I was mentioning, so organic, you've got that. You've got the books, you've got the podcast, et cetera. And then the easy to execute part, or the proof is like, you know, I've partnered with, you know, some other brands in the past, but the easy to execute, this is the most important thing, is you're actually pitching them something. You're not just saying like, oh, let's figure out a way to collaborate. You're saying like, I would love to do, you know, 3 sponsored LinkedIn posts, 10, you know, sponsored. I would love for you to be the exclusive sponsor of my newsletter for the next year or something to continue to hammer home this message. Are you free on Thursday at 10 a.m. to talk about this idea?
And do you think that there's, what's your take on whether my personal brand, because that's where we started with my hesitation in the first place.
Yeah.
What do you think the effect would be?
To be doing these types of partnerships. So here's another thing. It doesn't have to be the LinkedIn post. It doesn't have to be the newsletter post. You know what it could be? The extent of it could be, I would love to come and speak at your all hands marketing meeting.
I actually think that there's some that I'm very comfortable with.
Right.
Like if we see in the survey people want tools, and I'm like, hey, this is a tool I already recommend.
Yep.
And so why not have this natural partnership?
Yes.
That makes sense. But if I did, I don't know what the effect would be if like they're like, hey, we want you to do this, you know.
Like a ad.
What she just did.
Well, don't do that then.
If
you don't.
What do you think? But I'm also not sure if it's the worst thing in the world either. Like,
dude, if it's so values aligned and you know that you got 80% of your people on your newsletter saying, I want this, why would you not want to expose that to more people?
Right.
Because It's so values aligned.
Yeah. How would I know, though, if it's in, how do I get into the consumer's head and say, like, to me, yeah, how would I know if it decreases my credibility?
You know, I think that this is like, again, it's going back to this shift. It's a service mindset. It's not, it's a win-win-win. It's values aligned. Everyone's winning. You're getting paid. The brand gets to access people who, you know, they're, let's face it. They are renting your credibility. Mm-hmm. This is 100%. It's that, you know, they're renting your name and likeness basically to spread the word about their product. But at the end of the day, if you know that this, you tell me all the time that you're, like, big thing is you want to impact people's lives. Mm-hmm. You want them to actually make the change.
Right. That's my bigger priority than getting paid.
That is your biggest priority, right? And so if you fundamentally feel in your soul that, like, if they use it, if more people use an app like Freedom, do you think that they would have happier lives?
Of course, yeah.
So you should feel stoked to do this partnership.
I guess I don't want it to just be about that, right? But maybe there's a way to go to Freedom or whoever and say, as part of the indestructible model, this is a wonderful
100%. Yes. So a big part of this for someone like you is figuring out a way to craft the deal where it feels great.
Right.
It doesn't have to feel like I'm an influencer doing a deal and doing a video just because the brand gave me a brief and I'm just like reading robotic talking points.
Right. Like, well, what I like about it is I'm pitching.
You're the one leading this.
Right.
It's not them being like coming inbound and being like, Mir, talk about us.
Well, that's why I say no, because every time they send it to me, I'm like, no, I'm not doing that.
So if you're the one leading it, it's much more of this, the power imbalance is not like this, it's not weird, it's not wonky. It's like much more of a level playing field, or even, you may even be kind of leading the charge a bit. And again, it's like, it's much more of a blank slate. They've never thought of doing this before. They may not even have budget assigned for this yet. And yeah, this kind of the sales cycle might be a bit longer, but like if I came to you and said, Nir, like you could forge, I personally, if I look at your brand, I think that you could add $1 million a year to your business doing something like this with a handful of brands.
Wow.
Where you become almost like a spokesperson.
With my current audience?
Yeah, 100%.
Wow.
Because it's who you represent. You have a different level of cachet, sold 1 million books. This is pressworthy for them. They'll say, we are aligned with Nir Eyal, best-selling author of these books. And you know, he gave this authentic testimonial for our product of how it helps people in the following reasons. Literally, I think you could add 7 figures to your business doing something like this.
Wow.
But again, it requires you to be the one kind of leading this and reaching out because, you know, brands are not going to be like, I wonder if Nir Eyal would ever want to partner with us and be a spokesperson or an ambassador.
Right.
They're not like sitting in their boardroom thinking about that.
So you're saying, so now that I know what they're spending money on, I'm going to pitch them, here's what I would love to do with you.
Yeah. The most important thing to realize here is that whether or not they're currently spending money on this is irrelevant. Because they may not be anymore. So I think a lot of people get hung up on this. It's like, yeah, but what if they're not doing that anymore? That's not the point.
Oh.
The point is that you're giving them something tangible to react to.
Okay.
They're going to be like, wow, Nir is interesting.
But isn't that the necessary step?
This is to get the email opened. This is to get the pit. This is to pique their interest. They're going to open the email with a subject line of digital wellness day ?
Got it.
Frankly, I think you have a leg up because they're going to open an email from you, like because of who you are. Probably if they know who you are, I'm sure they do.
Thanks.
But like most people, it's hard to like cut through the noise. But for you, this is why leading with the relevancy is so important.
I see.
Because that's usually what they have budget for things that they
and you want it to be as specific, like just opening with, like what if I didn't see the digital wellness day and know that that's important to them, which makes tons of sense.
Yeah.
If I just saw a bunch of ads pushing their product.
Yep. Yeah, that is like an indication that
then what would be the subject line?
I mean, I think that
like partnership opportunity. No,
partnership opportunity is not.
They get a million
too generic. They get a million of those emails. Again, I'm gonna break my advice that I give to most.
No, make it generic.
Well, the advice that I would give again, it's like you have an advantage because you have a lot of credibility.
But let's say if I was just getting
started. Yeah, so I do think that it would be related to, I love large language models for this because you can just get some themes of all the ads they're running and be like, it seems like XYZ is important to you.
Got it.
These are like the messages that you're trying to get
The
product attributes.
Okay.
And so that would be what I would lead with probably in, you know, so timeliness is a good hook. So like it's, you know, something really like in the situation with Freedom, it would be like, you know, for example, it'd be something like, 1 million distraction-free people in 2025. So something like that.
Okay.
Something that would be like a million, like helping them think like, oh, we could reach 1 million more people with our app. And then the natural pitch or the natural hook is this partnership proposal that you're doing. So it's like just like more, you know, more customer acquisition or larger customer acquisition, I would say.
Awesome. Awesome. So this is, okay, so this totally makes sense for the product side. So I figure out what people want. Let's say it's tools. I go figure out who those tool makers are. I propose them what I would like to do with them. Is that it?
Well, they're going to either say yes or no, or you're going to get engaged in some sort of conversation. And so this is what we help people with in our coaching program is like, basically, how do you devise a proposal that you get excited about and the brand gets excited about and you feel certainty that your audience will as well. And so this is really where I think a lot of the art is with respect to partnerships, because it's just so different for every deal, especially for one where it's just so much more bespoke than like a normal brand that's reaching out. And so the components of the deal are going to look very different for every partnership. But really what I encourage is like you get on the discovery call. That really is the gold standard, is like push for a call, be like, hey, let's talk. For the right brand, you might even want to freaking fly out to them. If it makes the most, like a company like Salesforce, for example, let's say you reach out to them and they're like, let's talk, Nir. So maybe someone from the executive team at Salesforce like flies out to meet you or whatever. And like that would be probably a worthwhile conversation to have, or worthwhile thing to do if you're talking like 6-7 figure type partnership for an ambassadorship.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And so what I encourage people to do in these initial discovery meetings is you just make it like a conversation. You make it, you think of like some questions in advance, like tell me about your product roadmap. What are the types of things that you're working on? What are your business objectives, your marketing objectives for this year? Dude, you'll crush this because you're a marketer. You understand this type of stuff. You're a product person, so you could get in the weeds of all that and just make it about them and not you. You know, yes, you have this big, you know, opportunity to help them in a lot of ways, but you don't focus on that initially.
Right.
It's all about them. And the conversation naturally progresses from there. I think a lot of people overthink this aspect. But when you make it about them, when you make it about helping them accomplish their objectives, yes, of course, your ultimate goal is to like, you know, you're going to make some money, your audience is going to be served. But you really focus on them because that's what they have money for.
Right.
Their own initiatives.
Are you coming prepared with like, as part of this is what I like to do. Yeah. Is there like a place to look at benchmarks or like what?
I think it's you're too early. Like the benchmarks can come when you put the proposal together. But the most important thing is that you gain insights from that conversation and regurgitate them back to the brand when you put your proposal together. So literally the first page of the proposal that I recommend is what I heard.
Okay.
It's the goals. Here's what you told me you were looking to accomplish. And now here is the 5 different packages that I'm going to offer to you that are all tied to those objectives. So kind of what I advise people to do is like literally on package one, it says accomplishes goal one. So the first goal that they said is more awareness about freedom. We don't know. People don't know about us enough. Like we're a hidden gem, blah, 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 blah. Okay, great. For the awareness package, let's, you know, do some sort of newsletter promotion.
So you're leaving that meeting with, this was awesome, I'll get back to you. Okay. So you're not pitching anything.
And you're not pitching anything.
Got it.
Yeah. And so they may, again, you may have pitched something in the initial pitch and they'd be like, oh, tell me more about what you had in mind. You say, you know, now that I talked to you, I need to think about this a bit more. And I'm going to come back to you with a different proposal because I actually want to tweak what I sent you, knowing that what your objective is now.
Perfect.
And so you have time. You have time to kind of think this through, hire someone like me, and then figure out what's going to be in the packages, what's the pricing going to look like, and so on.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Are you ready to run through a brick wall?
Like, yeah. Let's do it. Yes. This is actually it doesn't feel like a brick wall anymore. Actually, it used to feel like a brick wall, and now I think it's doable. I will need some help. Yeah. For sure. But that's what you're here for.
Yeah.
And no, it doesn't sound like a brick wall anymore.
Tell me, okay, coming into this conversation, you know, I knew a little bit about some of your skepticism. Like, what are some of your like main takeaways from this conversation?
I think the where my mind was really blown was the fact that it can add value. It can increase my open rate, it can decrease my churn rate from my newsletter, which is for most people, you know, this free newsletter is my product. And I think that's awesome. Just that feedback loop that I can get with my readers about what they care about, I think was amazing. And then if I can use that for authentic partnerships, sponsorships, and alliances, or product sponsorships and alliances, that's like the that's the output of building that process, and that I think will bear fruit for a very, very long time. And the fact that it will be authentic based on customer data, it's not inbound at all. In fact, like, I can still not pay attention to inbound and maybe just go outbound for things that I really think will add value based on data from my customers. I think that's a huge, huge takeaway.
You know, the beautiful part about the next like iteration of this strategy for you, I think, is starting to cross-sell across your speaking engagements.
What do you mean?
Because let's say that a conference or event wants you to come and be the keynote speaker or whatever. Newsletter sponsorship, newsletter blasts, and newsletter or LinkedIn posts can be part of this deal. So you can start like upselling these packages by saying, like, I'm going to get more people to attend your conference.
Right.
By talking about it in my newsletter, by talking about it on LinkedIn.
Right. For an extra fee.
And like, if I were you, I would use the companies that and the conferences and the brands that you're already doing speaking gigs for as early signals of interest that they may be interested in a partnership like this. Some of these brands who are coming, flying you out to like speak, you could be like, hey, love doing that. And I actually think it would be awesome to talk about other partnership opportunities.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I could speak about your brand or your initiative all year long.
How would that change? So I get it with products. How is, by the way, products different from sponsorships?
So products are, I look at your products as your books.
Okay.
And speaking. Those are that.
Oh,
those are
my product. Okay,
your
got
products.
Got it, not their products. Got it.
Yeah. Okay. So it's your products, the things that you sell. And sponsors is like other people's stuff.
Okay. And then tell me about what the template would look like for alliances.
I mean, I think it's about, again, like proposing to these other people that like, this is a win-win thing, right? Like I have identified that people in my audience need you. They need your expertise because this is not my zone of genius. First of all, that's a pretty humbling thing. If you were to, they were to get a message from someone like you being like, hey, I need you. I want to put you in front of my audience, right? Imagine if you got a message like that, right? And so that you're already going to start off on a great foot. And then you can open the conversation and you should tell them why you're doing this. You should say like, look, I have a strategy where it's like, it's customer first, it's audience first. I surveyed them and they're having this issue and that's why I reached out to you. And so people will feel great about that, feeling that it's in service. But then also you can open up that conversation to potentially be like, hey, and maybe as part of this, we could do some sort of collaboration where you put me in front of your newsletter as well. And so whether it's for the Indistractable paperback in November or whatever the thing is you want to sell, I don't think it's a complicated pitch. It's basically just like leading with like, hey, I want to, you know, promote your book to my newsletter.
And is it then finding people who are like comparable? That's always been a kind of a
no, definitely not. It's about service. I don't obsess over size. Like I would, if someone's book is amazing and they have 5,000 newsletter subscribers, I would equally put someone's offer in front, even if they're not doing anything for me. Even if they're not scratching my back and talking about me on their newsletter.
If you generally like it.
If you generally like it.
It's service.
It's service.
Right.
Right. And so there may be scenarios where the mutual collaboration naturally occurs, which is great. But a lot of times you're not going to get anything out of it. You're not going to get a cut, an affiliate thing.
But that, I love the fact that you're going from, is it worth it? Do you have enough subscribers? Is there enough money to, was it in the survey results?
Exactly.
Like, that's all you're looking at. Yeah. And if it's not in survey results, like, don't do it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. That's really huge. And then from there, yeah, that's great. So even if it's a small newsletter, if it's super valuable, that's all that matters.
100%. That's all that matters. And again, like what I really love to focus on here is that when your audience member, just their life is so much more complete because they read this book that you recommended, they're going to now trust you so much more.
Right.
They're going to now want to buy your book more because they feel like they're finally able to be at a point where they can finally take action on your advice. And so it's just from a trust building perspective too. It's just I really believe in this kind of three-legged stool. And look, of course, I'm the sponsorship guy. That's my shtick. But it's equally important to figure out the products, the things you're selling, and the alliances too, because you're not fully serving them otherwise.
Makes sense.
Awesome. Dude, is your life changed?
It is. I just never thought of it this way before. I love that. Like it's not – like your book is about sponsorship magnets, it's sponsorships. You think about the end result, but that's not where you start. You start with your customer.
You start with the customer, you learn more about them. This is the number one thing is like people sit in a room and they think, what brands and companies would I like to work with?
Right.
And then they just do nothing because they just don't know, or it's intimidating. And it's like, no, it's not about you.
Yeah.
They don't care about you. It's about your audience.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Dude.
I love it.
Thank you so much, man.
Thank you. This is really wonderful.
Dude, this is such a dream. And honestly, dude, I'm such a huge fan of your work. And this is just an absolute dream.
Likewise.
To talk to you. If people want to learn more about your work, where should they go?
Thank you. Yeah. And this was super, super. This is like one of the most valuable conversations. I don't know how long we've been here, but it was unbelievable.
Let's go.
Unbelievable. Yeah, really mind blown. And I want to recommend this methodology because I talked to a lot of people with newsletters, and this is one of their first questions is like, how do I make my newsletter? And I don't know because my newsletter's not habit forming. And I wrote the book on habit formation because I didn't think it had all the steps.
Well, you know, there's this thing called alliances.
Yeah. I've heard about this. This is Guy Justin you should talk to. No, that's perfect. We should definitely talk about that as well because there's a lot of value here. And my website is nearandfar.com. Near spelled like my first name, N-I-R, and far.com. So nearandfar.com. And the first book is Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. And the second book is Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life.
And you're working on a third book to
come? Yes, that'll be out in about a year. So June 26th.
Love it. Thanks again, man.
Thank you.